Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, the solar eclipse is going to take place a week from today, and I'm wondering if you're planning to observe it. Jim Lattice with us in the studio. He is director of the University of Wisconsin Space Place and a faculty associate in the Department of Astronomy at UW-Madison. So we'll talk with him about the eclipse. We can talk in general about astronomy. There was a meteor shower just recently that was really wonderful. We'll take a look at what's in the night sky, but zero in a bit here to begin the show with the eclipse. Where are you going to watch the eclipse, or are you going to watch the eclipse? As a matter of fact, it starts while I'm on the air. But the best part is going to be, I think, right after I'm off the air. So you can listen to me and then run outside and see what's going on. Jim Lattice, welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
If you have a question for Jim or a comment or want to know what it's going to be like in your neck of the woods or your part of Wisconsin, or maybe you have a trip planned to go and see the eclipse somewhere else, join in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Jim, are you surprised by all the hype that's been going on around this event?
Yes, I'm surprised at the hype. I knew there would be a lot of interest, but it really has captured, the attention of pretty much every media platform that there is, and people seem to really be willing to put forth some effort, either to make sure they know what time it is and what they should do, and even many to travel long distances to see it. But that's all perfectly appropriate, because this is one of the most interesting things we see in nature that really doesn't require fancy equipment or great preparation or anything to do. It's like, I like to recommend lunar eclipses, which I think are the same sort of thing. They're even easier to watch than a solar eclipse, but it's really they're really wonderful things to see the shadows, all this three-dimensional stuff that happens in space that we usually only see in diagrams. There we get to see it happen in the sky. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, really cool. Have you seen one before, a total?
I saw one. I've made two attempts and was rained out in on one, but I got to see the other one, and it's worth the trouble that you take to go see a total solar eclipse.
Yeah, we can talk some more about your experience, but let's go to Mike in La Crosse, I think, has a good question. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. I'm wondering if you can use a welding hat, a helmet, or a welding lens to view the eclipse.
So that's actually become a little more complicated in recent years. We used to say you could use a number 14 welder's glass or denser to look safely at the sun. And I think that's still true. But I understand from welders I know that there are now welding glasses that auto-dim themselves and in response to what the welding equipment is doing. And I'm guessing here, because I don't know anything about that kind of equipment, but that's probably not safe to look at the sun with. So there has to be a huge footnote there that, yes, if you know what you're doing and you're using the an old-fashioned low-tech welding glass, but just a blanket recommendation on welding glasses is not so clear.
So 14, what would be even darker, a 16, or would it be the other way?
Ask them where they sell you those. No, number 14 or denser is the only rule I know.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for calling. Carolyn in Madison, your turn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Any solar eclipse that I've enjoyed, the ones I've enjoyed the most, have been while I was watching shadows on the sidewalk as I walk under trees, and then check out the shadows under bushes. It's fascinating what happens to shadows.
Yeah, that's very observant of you, and that's one of the cool things that happens even during a partial eclipse.
Yes.
And that's right. Yeah. So what you're seeing there, say under the trees where the sunlight is sprinkled, is coming through little spaces between the leaves, and each one of those little speckles of sunlight there is a pinhole image of the sun.
Uh-huh.
And so if you notice, just on a normal day, there'll be little round spots. And if you look carefully, they're all perfectly round. A lot of them overlap, and so they make then kind of strange patterns. But if you see a single one, that's a perfect little round image because that's an image of the sun. And well, so during the eclipse, then when the sun is, when a good bit of it is blocked, you see the same thing. You see the image of the sun, but it's a little crescent of light.
Yeah, will we see, will the shadows disappear? I mean, will we just get big tree shadows when the eclipse happens?
So it depends on where you are. If you're in the total eclipse, if you're in the path of totality,
yeah.
Which of course is not happening here in Wisconsin, but if you're in the path of totality, then during the couple of minutes that the moon is blocking the sun, the light, there's still ambient light there, but it's coming from the corona of the sun, which is roughly speaking the brightness of the full moon. So you can see shadows in a full moon. So you might very well still see faint shadows in totality.
And Carolyn is from Madison. So what percentage of eclipse are we going to see for somebody like me or somebody like Carolyn?
Right. Yeah. So good question. So here in Madison, we're looking at about 85% of the sun's surface being covered by the moon. So it'll look kind of like, that is the sun, the surface of the sun that remains, will look kind of like if you imagine a crescent moon that's just 2-3 days after new moon. Imagine a crescent, not a real thick crescent of the moon, but not quite a, well, anyway, a couple day old moon. The shape of the sun will be roughly like that at maximum. They're about 85% of the surface
covered.
So
it's going to be pretty dark in Madison.
It'll certainly, assuming... As I keep worrying about, assuming the sky's clear,
yeah,
it'll look considerably dimmer. Now you still won't, the sky will still be blue, and you'll still see, shadows outside. They'll look a little bit odd because of the effect that Carol mentioned. But if you were say indoors and you weren't looking outside, you'd probably and working by daylight, you'd probably notice the dimming in the daylight, and it might be something like, if heavy overcast had come in or something along that line. So there'd still be daylight, diffuse daylight. But what we'll see though is during the partial eclipse, what we'll see is dimmed but direct sunlight. So the shadows won't go away the way they might when in heavy overcast. But the sky will remain blue. It's not going to get dark out.
Kevin in Baraboo has something for us. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning. Say, my wife and I are actually heading down to Southern Illinois next Sunday. We've got a hotel room in Urbana, and I figured that from there, we can kind of check the weather forecast and either, head off to the west towards St. Louis or could even head off in the east towards Kentucky. So we're kind of like hedging our bet just a little bit.
No, that's wise, I think.
So, and we also we went down to Prairie du Sac this morning because the library down there has some of the NASA eclipse glasses. So we went to get ours this morning at 9 o'clock when they opened, and there was even a bunch of people before us, but we got our two glasses, and I'm actually a welder, but I guess that 12 is okay, 13 is the best, and 14 is the best completely. I don't think that there's a 16 level welding goggle, but I'll have a number of things that we can do, and I'm also a metal sculptor, so I might, do some of my single wire sculptures, while I'm there, and maybe somebody would like to trade something for wherever we're at watching the solar eclipse.
That sounds wonderful, Kevin. Thank you so much for calling, and good luck. Hopefully
all
it's
right.
Going to rain where you
thanks
are.
Thanks for the information about welding glasses, too.
Yeah, that's great. Someone couldn't stay online, but wondered, can you glance at it?
So I take that to mean, without eye protection,
yes,
can you glance at the sun? And the answer is most of the time, no. But during totality, if you're in the path of totality, during totality, then it's safe to look at the sun without eye protection. So so then, glancing or just staring right at it is fine, because the corona of the sun, which is what you're seeing, again, that's just like roughly the brightness of the full moon. So that's not a threat to your eyes. But no, any stage of the partial eclipse, when there's any portion of the disk of the sun exposed, it's a question of the intensity of the light. The amount of the eclipse will just change how much of your retina is exposed to that intense light. But if any part of your retina is exposed to that very intense sunlight, it damages it very, very quickly. And so
even seconds.
That's what the ophthalmologists say. Yeah, even seconds. And so I would say no. It's never okay to glance at the sun except during the total solar eclipse, the totality of the eclipse.
John in Green Bay up next. Hi, John.
Good morning, all. I was just wondering, are you able to take a smartphone and video record the solar eclipse, or is that too much light on a video phone?
I actually just saw something about that, Jim. You need to make some special adjustments with your smartphone, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, it varies with the characteristics of the camera on your phone. And my understanding is that some of them have a wide-angle enough lens that you should be able to image the sun on that chip in there that's doing the imaging without damaging it. But if you have a longer focal length lens, and you can actually retrofit phones with longer focal length lenses, the cameras, as you do that, the more and more of that sunlight is spread across the chip, and that would probably damage the chip. So it's really hard to say in detail. You definitely have to be really careful when you start talking about actual cameras, dedicated cameras, because they have longer focal length lenses typically. Okay. It's sort of a question of how risky you're willing to be. At least with the phone, you're not, you know, potentially damaging your eyes or anything along that line. You can look at the screen of the phone, so you can aim the phone. It's perfectly safe to look at the screen of the phone. Just don't look at the sun. While the phone is imaging the sun, it's okay to look at that screen. But I can't guarantee that you won't end up with some damage to the sensor afterwards.
Well, thank you very much. That helped a lot. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Wanda on Facebook asks if there are observatories where you can view the eclipse.
There probably are. We don't have any special events planned in Madison. Generally, unless you're doing some kind of scientific research, people don't really use a telescope to study a solar eclipse. Photographers will to get great images of the sun. But a telescope is not the best way. In fact, for many telescopes, like the Washburn telescope over Washburn Observatory, that telescope is way, way too long a focal length. You can't even get more than a fraction of the surface of the sun focused with that telescope. So you actually miss, you wouldn't get the effect that you're looking for in the eclipse. So for the most part, telescopes are not a very good solution to that. And so, no, observatories tend not to do that unless they're just hosting an event, you know, so that people can have a gathering place or something along that line. But for the most part, you can walk out on your front porch and look at the eclipse. So there's some of that at big planetariums, maybe some at some observatories, but nothing right in Madison.
Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're taking a look at the sky. We've got the eclipse on our minds a little bit right now, but we can also talk about the night sky. There are some upcoming eclipses as well, and Jim can tell us about those. Join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Annie in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Annie.
Hi. I was wondering if you were going to report on this. Something I saw on TV this morning. Anybody who wants to make a lot of money in a hurry will do a bootleg thing. And what has happened is they made bootleg viewing glasses for the eclipse that are not going to protect people's eyes. There's an internet, and people should go on the internet. There is an actual number that should be stamped on their glasses to make sure that a federal agency has actually checked out which are safe and which are not safe.
Thanks for that. Jim, a comment?
Yeah, I've heard a bit about that myself. And, I mean, if you're... It's a difficult problem because there's no way for an average person to test those filters because they are designed, the properly designed ones, the ones that meet that ISO specification that you just referred to. They also control how much light comes through in the ultraviolet and infrared parts of the spectrum, not just the visible, and you can't check that easily yourself. That's right. There is an ISO, Industrial Standards Organization standard, and if the ISO citation is on there, that helps. Although if somebody wants to bootleg something, there's nothing stopping them from printing right on there that meets ISO standard, whatever. I don't want to cause a lot of paranoia about this. I don't have any idea of particular glasses, and there's no good way to test, but most of them out there, if they're made by a reputable place, and there's a good half dozen or more reputable manufacturers of these sorts of things. So we've been the ones that we have had, we're now sold out of them, ones at Space Place, but we bought them from a reputable manufacturer, and there's a bunch of them out there. You can find on the NASA Eclipse website, if you just Google for NASA Eclipse, you'll find it. You'll find a discussion of the also on the American Astronomical Society's website. They have a discussion about what are safe solar eclipse viewing glasses. So you can find manufacturers and advice on that at those places, too.
Now, Annie, thank you very much for calling. Michael in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
Well, there's been a lot of talk here about glasses. I'm wondering if it sounds like a bad idea to me, but my daughter's 6. She is talking a lot about it and would love to get a view of this. Is there any recommendation for possibly having children be able to see this, or is it just not worth the risk? Or
No, I'm so glad you asked, because you're right. There is a lot of concern about glasses as if that's the only way to view the eclipse, and that is definitely not the case. And the old-fashioned approach, it's nothing wrong with it, even though it's old-fashioned, of making a pinhole viewer, which can be as simple as, say, 2 index cards, and you put a pinhole with a pin or a thumbtack or something like that in one of those cards, and you let sunlight pass through that, and the pinhole will act as a lens and will image the sun on the other card, and it's perfectly safe to look at that projected image of the sun. So that's an easy thing to do, and that can become more elaborate. It makes a great project for kids, and it's a very perfectly safe sort of approach.
She'll love it. Perfect. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Bill in Ashland next. Bill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey, you better not be retiring next, I'll tell you that.
I'm hanging around for a while yet, Bill.
That's good. Hey, I was wondering, could you take a magnifying glass? You know, start fires with magnifying glasses, you know?
Sure.
And I was wondering if you could shine the image of the sun on a piece of paper, you know, like a quarter size or half size image of the sun, if you could see it that way through that magnifying glass.
Yes, in theory, although if it's a typical desk magnifying glass, you'll just burn a hole in your paper like you would any other day. You could do something like that. What you would need to do, you'd need as long a focal length lens as your arm is long, or even longer. You could project it on the sidewalk in front of you if you had a lens that had a 4-foot focal length or something along that line. The longer the focal length gets, the bigger the image of the sun will get. And the more spread out the energy of that image is across whatever it is you're projecting on. So with the short focal length, magnifier. That's why it burns a hole in the paper, because all that energy is concentrated into a tiny image. So a long focal length lens, yes, in theory you can do that. Just make sure you don't, nobody tries to look up that beam that you're focusing there with the magnifier.
Oh, boy, yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. Let's go to Cheryl in Green Bay next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. We're flying out of Green Bay Sunday to Finland Monday, and I was just kind of curious, is there any effect when you're flying to the with lights at all? Or?
Well, that's an interesting question. Yeah, not to my knowledge. I don't know of any reason that that they change airline schedules or anything. It might be that if an airplane was actually due to land or take off in the couple of minutes around totality, that they might alter that. I've never actually heard of that. But no, as far as I know, there's no disruption to airline schedules nor any effects. In theory, you could certainly see it from an airplane, and people have observed eclipses from airplanes, and in fact, usually, and this time as well, NASA is flying a couple of research aircraft in the shadow of the sun deliberately to be able to study the corona of the sun. But I don't know of any disruptions to air travel.
Okay, yeah,
interesting.
I haven't figured out the timeline of it either. How what's the difference in that where we're at?
Well, Green Bay, where is
so?
It's a partial. It's on the northern part. It won't be a full eclipse.
No, so in Green Bay, the time of the maximum eclipse is around 1:16, and
okay.
So and it goes for an hour and a quarter on either side of that. So that would be the only time that there would be any question of the eclipse affecting air travel anyway. But I suspect not. Of course, the airline will tell you, but no, I don't think there'd be any reason to expect a problem.
All right.
Yeah, we didn't plan that.
But your trip sounds like fun, so have a great time, Cheryl. Appreciate your call. Yeah, appreciate it. Al in Western Wisconsin up next. Hi, Al.
Howdy. Hey, by the way, I love listening to your show every day. So
thank you.
Kudos to you guys. I'm part of a group that's going to meet near Shoshone, Wyoming next week, and the site that we have selected should be right in the center line of, I think it's pronounced Umbra or Umbra.
Yeah, that's right. Umbra is usually what we say.
So, and we're going to be on a little high area where we can look out over a valley below us. Will we see, assuming there's no clouds or smoke from the fires, will we see a defined shadow coming towards us, or will it be kind of a washed out edge that we see coming?
That's a good question. It depends a lot on that landscape. And so if you are in kind of an elevated area where the horizon is pretty distant, then...
About 40 miles away.
Pardon?
The horizon's about 40 miles away.
Yeah. So then there's a fair chance, that you'll see the oncoming umbra. It starts out as kind of a dark spot on the distant horizon, and then you see the dark spot get wider, and what you're seeing there is the darkened footprint of the umbra there in the atmosphere, and as it approaches you, it gets bigger. Like imagine an oncoming train or something.
Yeah.
It's getting wider and wider. So in theory, if the landscape is right to reveal it, you'll see that at sea. It's pretty obvious when you're on the ocean looking out onto the, flat, clear, distant horizon, you see it approach. So it depends to some extent on you. It sounds like you've got a good chance, though, of seeing that. So definitely watch for that in the last, minute or so before totality.
Yeah, and I had the weather guys on the show the last Monday of the month, last month, and someone called and I think had been in Wyoming, as a matter of fact, or someplace out west, and had observed exactly what you're talking about. And he said it was really cool.
It is cool, yeah. And watch for it going the other way, too, as it leaves.
We actually scoped out the site a year ago in preparation for this coming Monday. So, it's a little rise in the landscape, but it's basically desert where we're going.
Oh,
so, We're all really looking forward to it. There's people coming from all over the country.
Sounds promising.
Yeah. Thanks, Al.
All right. Thanks so much.
And let's just hope there aren't clouds out there. Tony in Wakefield, Michigan, you're up next. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
I thank you again for always a wonderful show.
Thank you.
My two basic questions are, I'm up in the Upper Peninsula, which your producer seems to know very well, and I'm wondering what percentage of totality will happen up here and approximately what time the eclipse will start and or finish, if you would.
Can you tell me, I don't know Wakefield, can you tell me a little
more
exactly
about,
where that is?
I am about 14 miles away from Hurley, Wisconsin on US 2, if that's helpful.
Okay.
Okay, so not over near Superior or...
No.
Close. No, not that close, but 100. Lake Superior, 50, 60 miles through the Porkies, but...
I'm checking a tool here. I think the times aren't going to vary too much, even if I put the pin in slightly the wrong place, but so in that area, in sort of the western part of the Upper Peninsula,
right.
We're looking at the time of maximum eclipse will be about 12 minutes after 1:12 p.m. or so, give or take, and you're going to see about not quite 75, more like 74% of the sun obscured. So we're moving as Madison, we have about 85%, and you're moving away from the path of totality as you go north. So the farther out of that they get, the smaller and smaller the fraction of the eclipse. So 74%, that's still
pretty good.
Yeah,
it'll still be visible in terms of effects with the leaves and such.
Oh yes,
I've seen the eclipse back in the late 70s when I was in Chicago, and it was absolutely strange. I mean, I don't know how to explain it other than that.
Yes, that's right. That change in the light source, all our shadows, daylight shadows, come from the sun, which is normally this perfectly round dot in the sky, and that the change in the shape of the light source makes the edges of shadows get weird. I don't really know the optics of that, but I noticed that too.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. There are, and before we go back to the phones, Casey's up next, but there are upcoming eclipses as well. You know, it's been a long time, but now suddenly we're going to get some.
That's right. So the only total solar eclipses in recent years have just touched little bits of the U.S. There was one in early 79, for example, that was actually pretty deep up here, but that most of that track was in Canada. The last one to really cross the U.S. was in 1918, so it's been 99 years since we've had a total solar eclipse cross a large section of the U.S., and this one goes coast to coast, Oregon to South Carolina. So there's been kind of a drought, so to speak, but we're going to start catching up with the averages, because in 2024, there will be another total solar eclipse, and the path is going to go, it's going to be different. It's going to start. Not start, but it'll cross through Mexico and then across the southern U.S., Texas, and right up, it's going to cross right across Carbondale, Illinois, which is getting a lot of the, making a lot out of this eclipse. They're going to get another chance 7 years from now, and then off north through Ohio and Michigan. Still Wisconsin, we'll still see a partial eclipse at that time, but we'll be able to drive a little closer than we can to see that. So 2024, April, I think, but early 2024.
Very cool. Now on to Casey in Rice Lake. Casey, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Yes, this is a special event, there is no doubt, and everyone's really, really excited about this solar eclipse, but I've been doing some research on it, and an ophthalmologist posted on Facebook that there really is no safe way to view the solar eclipse. Even with the glasses or whatever, that there will be a host of people that will be in clinics after this with damage to their eyes of certain kinds. So what's your thought on that?
Well, I guess I...
There's no way to look at it without any protection.
Right. You certainly need a method or protection to look at the sun. I have observed many eclipses with eclipse glasses, and my ophthalmologist hasn't chided me about that. But probably what he's talking about is unprotected viewing of the sun. And absolutely, you do not do that. You use an indirect method like pinhole viewers, or you use properly constructed solar filters. But we've been using solar filters for years and years. They're specifically designed and they're laboratory tested to keep the light to acceptable levels and the acceptable wavelength ranges. So the right ones are fine.
There we go. Thanks, Casey. Bob in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. We have been lucky. We have found a NASA-designated observation site in southeastern Nebraska. In fact, it's south of Lincoln, about 60 miles or so. And so we're staying in western Iowa. And similar to what the other fellow talked about when he said they were going down to Illinois and then watch the radar maps and figure out where it's going to be most favorable to watch that.
Good plan.
Yeah. The other thing is, just to tag on what you said about that approaching umbra, if you watch it across a valley or something, that is approaching at approximately 1,800 miles an hour.
That's about right.
Yeah, and so it's faster than the speeding bullet.
Yep, well, not quite, but...
but it's coming pretty fast.
Yeah, it's faster than any of your airplanes, except maybe really super fast military ones or something. Yeah.
There you go, yeah. There you go. Okay.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, good luck. Appreciate the call. Oh, lots of people going to look. Rick in South Range, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I've been following this with the particular concern about these counterfeit glasses. My question is this. Is it possible to pre-test glasses that you might already have by looking at a very bright light in your house to see if light is getting through? I would think if a light bulb is getting through, then that's not safe enough to look at the sun.
Well, this would be a really hard thing to implement. You're right. An ordinary light bulb, an ordinary incandescent bulb, you really shouldn't see anything through those glasses. However, I was playing around with light sources myself. I have one of those high-intensity LED flashlights, which are blinding if somebody shines one of those in your eyes. I can see that LED quite distinctly through the glasses. So it isn't true that no terrestrial or household source can penetrate those glasses. But you certainly shouldn't see like an ordinary incandescent bulb through them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Thanks, Rick. And so the safe bet is to go to one of those two sites that you mentioned. And
yeah, I mean,
it's going to be really hard to find glasses now.
I think so. There, some places are still shipping them. And I understand that there are local places. People were telling me over the weekend they had seen them at, I don't know, Walmart or Hy-Vee or something. So I haven't been keeping track at all of where they're sold locally. But they seem to be, some retailers around seem to have them. But yeah, I expect, my understanding was that the online places, even though the time is short, they're not shipping ones and twos anymore. You have to buy 100 if they even have those to sell.
Steve in Madison, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. See, I have a question. I'm 70 years old. And when I was a kid, we had a partial eclipse, and my mother darkened the glass. I think my dad had some real small window panes out in the garage. And he darkened the window panes with a oil lamp, a regular lamp.
Yeah, they used to do that. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so half of the window pane was black. You couldn't see through it, but where that edge of the window pane came through, was the filter. And we used that to look at the sun and the eclipse.
Yep.
And I'm not blind today, but is that a... is that a reasonable thing to do? Is that a good filter? My mother said, just don't burn your eyes. If it hurts, make sure you make it darker.
Well, that's good advice. But normally you don't feel any pain in your retina as the eye damage happens. But as you say, you're not blind. When you You know, the solar eclipse glasses we keep talking about, basically what they have done is use carbon particles in the polymer plastic to absorb light, and they can control the density of those particles to get a specific amount of transmission through there. And that's what you're doing when you're depositing soot on the window pane. You're distributing carbon particles across that. And so, yes, if the density is right, then you can do that. And people used to do that. That was a very typical way of doing it. We don't recommend that for a number of reasons. You can't control that. You can't really tell how dense the particles are you've deposited. Also, they're quite fragile, a little slip of the finger, or a scratch or a smudge or something like that, and you've changed that as well. So we don't recommend that anymore because there are much better, more reliable approaches now. But people did that. That was pretty typical. There are other things that people used to do too that we don't recommend because there are just too many ways to go wrong with them now that there are good other good methods. And the pinhole projection, I got to go back to that. That's very underappreciated and a good way to go.
I did that. Was it the 70s? I can't remember.
Sure.
It was a long time ago, but it worked well.
Yeah. No, it's really underappreciated. I think people should be, even if you got eclipse glasses, make a pinhole viewer and try it out.
Yeah, for sure. Steve, thanks.
You still have glasses at Space Place to sell?
No, we sold out of those glasses. We have some more that we hope are going to come in, and if we get more, then we'll put them up on that. We'll put that on the website that they're available. Fantastic. So look at the Space Place website.
Well, fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Susan emailed to say that the Barlow Planetarium in Neenah, Menasha, is holding an event, and they may have glasses
as
well.
Oh, okay. Worth checking.
Yeah, for sure. Ron in La Crosse. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I've been looking at the sun and watching the sunspots for years with an old Gilbert telescope my dad bought for Christmas 1958. But, of course, you don't look directly into the eyepiece. You turn the telescope upside down in the sleeve that's attached to the tripod, and then you aim it at the sun. It's easy to aim a telescope at the sun. You just watch where its shadow is, where the telescope is casting a minimum shadow, and then it's lined up. Then you put a piece of paper underneath the eyepiece, which is now upside down, and you can see sunspots. And of course, I used it for a solar eclipse back in March of 1970. And I also have a telephoto lens that I used to use with old film camera, and it's got a couple enlargers. And that thing can also put a cone on the end of that telephoto lens to, you know, keep
sure.
the paper in a piece.
So those are all projection methods that you're using there, and they're all perfectly fine as long as you're looking at the projected image of the sun, and nobody looks through that telescope while it's pointed at the sun. Those methods all will work just fine.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, I'm telling you. I'm looking forward to, let's see, I'll be on the air, but by the time I'm off the air, then I should, in Madison area.
In Madison, the middle of the eclipse is about 1:15.
All right. So
that's probably, if you're only going to look once, that's the time to look.
Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much
for being here. Thank
you, Larry. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Glad
Jim Lattice, director of the University of Wisconsin Space Place. Faculty Associate in the Department of Astronomy at the UW-Madison. Going to be a lot of fun, isn't it? It's so really a lot of excitement generated about this eclipse, and it's going to be fun probably to talk about it after the fact as well. Well, it's also a lot of fun to talk about family trees and exploring your roots. And Lori Bessler, reference librarian with the Wisconsin Historical Society, will be doing just that next here on the Ideas Network.